listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 10th of March 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Village Butchery at 102 Oceanview Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 10th of March, Jan Scott talked to Colin Bedham from the Artworks Theatre, John Carlaw, producer, director and writer, and foodie Sarah Latouche.
And we'll say good morning to Colin Bearden. Good morning, Colin, and welcome.
Good morning, Jane. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Now, you've been involved with the Artworks Theatre for, the last 4 years?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, how did you get involved?
How did I get involved? I just turned up at a meeting and they needed volunteers, so I put my hand up and that's how I got involved.
Uh-huh. Do you have a theatrical background?
No, not really. I'd worked with theatre people a lot professionally when I was working with computing and designing on design. And we had some big projects in Europe with Helsinki Theatre Academy and other people. But I was always on the technical side there, so this was something quite new for me.
Right. So what sort of technical work did you do?
It was sort of multimedia, early days of multimedia in the late 90s, getting multimedia into all forms of art, but that was in theatre, and we were looking at a particular project about sketching out ideas for set design and sending them over the internet, which was quite new in those days. You know,
right. Kind of so you have an art background, do you?
Not really. My first degree was philosophy, but most of my working life I was something to do with new technology, with digital technologies.
Oh, right. That would be interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And, of course, you brought your considerable talents to bear at Artworks, not just in your role as the chairperson, but also with the with the set, helping with the sets and lighting and all that sort of thing, haven't you?
Yeah, I've sort of gone around and done just about everything, really, and a lot of it's been kind of self-taught and nobody else was doing it, so I stuck my hand up and did it. People seemed to like what I was doing, so I carried on.
You know? Well, we're very grateful that you did, I think. Now, did you come into the position of chairman with a vision in your head of what you wanted Artworks to become?
I don't know about vision of what I wanted to become as much as I suppose I thought it would take 3 years to kind of get it organised and running properly enough to put on the kind of shows we're putting on now. Yeah. So I suppose it was a vision. Really wanted to get the community involved, as anybody that wants to act or write or do lighting or whatever they want to do, to feel that the theatre is a good home and a place to do that, and interesting things are happening. But at the same time, having links with the theatrical profession, particularly nationally in New Zealand.
Mm. Have you done any acting yourself?
Not really. I've done a couple of stand-up comedy things, but that's about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Well, we're very lucky, of course, that we've got such a breadth of talent on the island, not just acting and writing, but design and all that sort of thing as well. Absolutely. And to have the Artworks Theatre as an outlet, it's great, isn't it?
It is great. Of course, it's always, it's only there if people come along and take part in it and prepared to do a bit of work to keep it running. It's always tenuous, but at the moment it's running pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be a good setup with the foyer area that can be used as well as the theatre itself. So it's multi-purpose now, isn't it?
Yes, although the foyer is now a cafe in the daytime, which is great because the building's open and it's friendly and we can sell tickets there. Yeah. But it does reduce its use in the daytime,
yeah. Yeah, right. But you can have small meetings and things in there.
People just meet in the cafe and just have coffee at the same time, which is nice.
Yeah, yes, it is. It's very ambient there. Now, when you first came involved with Artworks, of course, it was in a transition, wasn't it, of being further developed and the interior being changed around.
That's when we first moved to the island. That was pretty much finished, but I think that probably kind of killed off the trust, really, that used to run it. Okay. I think everyone got a bit tired with that because it was closed for about a year, wasn't it? Mm. And I think that kind of knocked the stuffing out of what was there. So we really had to kind of bring it back from that. I mean, the building was okay. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's okay. But the infrastructure just didn't exist. We had those old plastic seats still from 20 years ago. And the lighting system didn't work. There was no sound system, you know. And so all that had to be done. And
So how did you get the funding for doing all of that?
Well, the one thing the trust did left, they did leave a little bit of money because they hadn't really been active. So there was a little bit of money in their account. We had fundraising events. There are various groups like Choral Society and Live Arts all chipped in some money. I mean, we got it from wherever we could, and we got the best deals we could on things. And but some, a lot of it came out of our running grant. I mean, we tried to put aside $10,000 a year for new capital.
So where do you get the grants from?
We don't get grants. We get one grant from council, and everything else we have to raise through revenue.
Right. Yeah. So does the council give you an annual grant?
It gave us an annual grant, was set in 1997 at $10,000 a year, and it's still $10,000 a year.
Right.
15 years later.
Well, you're doing well to manage on that, I'd say.
Well, yeah, because it's costing, probably, we estimate next year it'll probably cost about $1,000 a week to keep it open.
Right. Mm. Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot of money, yeah.
It is a lot of money. But it seems to be being used quite well.
It's used almost to capacity, yeah. I mean, daytimes, it's, you know, if people want to come daytimes. And, yeah, you can book, but really you have to be looking 2 or 3 months ahead now if you want to book a slot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good.
It is good, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a wide variety of organisations that are using it, isn't it?
That's right. There's a lot of, on island, I mean, Choral Society, Kaleidoscope are the big shows. There's Dramability. There's various theatre groups that are now putting on plays. But then there's the whole musical side as well, and the concerts that come. And yeah. And then there's a youth thing on the Sunday nights. It's all go. Yeah.
I think there's a concert in there tonight, isn't there, for celebrating Women's Day?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And there's one last night.
All right. Okay. So what's ahead for you after you step down from this busy role?
Oh, well, I shall carry on being busy and I'll carry on doing theatre, I think. But I think, you know, it's a membership society and I think everyone should have a go at keeping the place running. I've done it for 4 years and that's been, yeah, I've been pleased to do that. But I would like to concentrate more on the sort of longer term development. For example, we've got this playwrights thing at the moment encouraging people on the island who are interested in writing plays to actually get the plays put on. And we got that starting this Easter with 5 local plays up at Easter. And then links with the professions. We had the Arthur Meek play last year and we had Cathy Downs do her show. Mm-hmm. And associated with our AGM, we've invited the Auckland Theatre Company to come over and talk about their new theatre building because we think that's going to be important for islanders if there's a major theatre downtown by the ferry terminal. That's going to be an important thing for islanders.
So. Yes, indeed.
So we're kind of trying to get in. I'd like to do that kind of thing, yes.
Just okay.
Promote the theatre kind of generally.
And talking about the AGM, that's coming up this week, isn't it?
It is. It's on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, yeah.
Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at Artworks, the AGM.
Yep.
Which will be interesting.
And it's the chance once a year for people who are kind of interested in theatre. You don't have to be terribly active or anything, but if you're interested and supportive, you know, for once a year, just to come along and find out what goes on, if you've got any views, and just show your support, really, you know, because it helps volunteers if they know that people come along and are interested.
That's right, and of course that's another major component of the success of Artworks is the support of the volunteers that you have.
Yes, yes, indeed, yes.
Yeah. If you had to pay people, you couldn't afford to do it, I wouldn't think.
Well, we do try and pay some people for some things because, you know, it's a lot of work and some of the jobs aren't always that pleasant to do. So, and to get them done well, you know, we don't mind small payments for people for doing jobs. That's the way it runs these days and it runs better that way. So,
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yeah. You were talking about the encouraging playwrights to write a play and that's going to be they're going to be performed over Easter. Who's producing those? Are they being produced by different people and who are going to be the actors?
Yeah, it's been a 10-week project and we're over halfway through now. 5 people came forward with plays. They're 20 minutes, up to 20 minute long excerpts or plays. They had a read through, they've had a workshop with the Dramability actors. They've now each got a director, they've each got a cast, So we've now got about 30 to 40 people involved in this project.
That's great.
And they'll be done one after the other. I mean, there'll be an interval, but mm-hmm. they have an evening with 5 20-minute plays presented, very much concentrating on the playwriting, so not high production standards necessarily, you know, basic stage and a table and a couple of chairs kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to concentrate on the play sort of in production, in its development.
Okay.
And then there'll be plenty of chance for talking afterwards.
Right. Yeah. Now, do these plays have a common theme, or are they, will they just be a random selection of topics and ideas?
No, I mean, each person's just come forward on their own. I would say that probably three of them are based on the island and events on the island, and two aren't. Yeah, I mean, some of them are realistic, some of them are quite over the top, and yeah, you've got a good range there, I think. It's going to be a fun evening, I tell you. It's going to be really
good.
It sounds
like it'll be a most entertaining evening. Yeah. And that's Easter, is that on the
Saturday
night?
It's coming up on Easter. It's Easter Friday and Saturday, the 6th and 7th of April, starting at 7 o'clock. You're getting 5 plays for $15. You can't do better than
wow,
that.
Wow, no. No, and bookings are available now, are they?
Yeah, well, they'll be starting this week, yeah.
Okay, so it'll be advertising the Golf News and Marketplace and whatever. Yeah, because I would think you'd need to get on fairly quickly.
I think so, because just with that number of participants, there's going to be quite a lot of people coming.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you just get your family along, you'll fill the hall, I would think. But
well, let's hope so. That'll be great.
Yes, yeah. it would be
a great encouragement to the playwrights if it is full.
Yes. Now, as chair of the artworks, you're chair of the trust, are you?
It's actually an incorporated society. The old trust was wound up, and this is a more open structure, yeah.
Right.
But I'm chair of that, yeah.
Okay. And does the incorporated society have a vision for the future?
It doesn't have a vision. I mean, its main aim is to encourage the education and training of local people in the performing arts, and that's what we want to do.
Mm.
It's not about necessarily putting on high professional shows or, you know, being necessarily just entertainment. And so we have to report to council every year on the number of people using the theatre, and it's about 16,000 visits or something last year.
Wow.
Over 60% of those were people participating in something.
That's great.
And the smaller proportion was the audience.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
I think it's wonderful.
Yes.
And that's our aim and object, you know, that people come along really to get up on the stage or to do something there, not just to come along and be an audience. Although, of course, we welcome audiences.
Yeah.
Of course. You can't put audiences off.
Oh, of course not. Does a person have to belong to an organisation that uses artworks to participate in those programmes, or can they just...
No, I mean, they all sort of run in their own way. We encourage people to join the Artwork Society. This year it's been free to join, so why wouldn't you want to join? How long we can sustain that, we don't know, but it would never be a financial burden to do so, but it sort of shows a commitment to the theatre and what we're doing, and you get information, and I think in the future you'll probably get discounts as well. So.
Right. Do you have a regular newsletter?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we have a regular circulation, and members get information about other things that go on as well, like we run training courses for lighting and sound and things like that.
Right. And how would somebody get involved if they wanted to get involved with Artworks?
Well, you just go, come along to the theatre, you come along and speak to people in the cafe, they would put you in touch, or the phone number is 372-2941, that's 2941, or artworkstheatre@gmail.com.
Right, okay.
But if you miss that, it's all on the front of the office by the front of the theatre. So.
Right. And even better if you come along to the AGM on Wednesday
night.
Come
along.
At 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock on Wednesday.
And I presume that the cafe will be open?
Probably something will be open, yes. We haven't really kind of... You know,
so if you're coming straight from work, you know, on the commuter ferry or something, you can grab a coffee or a bite to eat it with a bit of luck.
hope so. It's not AJAS will be open anyway. But the AGM is also followed by this presentation by the Auckland Theatre Company on their proposed new theatre. So
that's
a double reason for coming as well.
Whereabouts are they proposing to put that theatre?
It's somewhere on the waterfront. I'm not quite sure exactly where. That's what we're going to find out.
Okay.
But it's going to be a 600-seater theatre, which is supposed to be more than just a theatre. It's supposed to be open all day. And, and so I think if it does go ahead, it will make a big difference to islanders having access to performing arts in Auckland, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And maybe we'll have the opportunity to take one of our productions overseas.
Well, that's part of the reason I'm inviting them over. If we can get in early and be friends with them,
yes.
I think it'll be good for both of us.
Yeah. Indeed, yes. Well, let's encourage people to come along to the AGM on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at Artworks and put their hand up to help out or to be a supporter. And Colin, your contribution as the chair for the last 4 years has been considerable, and I'm sure you've been people really appreciate the work you've put in there, because it's been a full-time job, hasn't it?
It has, every day. Yeah.
Yes. So we thank you, and all the best for the future. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Okay. Bye. Wakey Radio.
Getting to know you. Yes, we're going to get to know John Carlaw. John's lived on the island now for 20 years. He's been coming down here all his life. And he's a well-known and reputed producer, director and writer. He's worked a lot overseas with the BBC. He's won the Chicago International Film Festival twice. And he's won the Best Factual Series New Zealand Film and TV Awards twice. He's done documentaries on a wide variety of people, from Ed Hillary to Ian Mune to Michael Houston, Michael King, Paul McCartney. He's done the South Bank Show, and he's also done the Southern Ocean League of the 1994 Whitbread Race on the New Zealand Endeavour. And of course, the Whitbread Race has become the Volvo Race, which is arriving in Auckland any day now. So tell us something about that trip, John. That must have been exciting.
Well, actually, I didn't actually sail on that boat. I made a film about it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I've always been involved in sailing, and I spent a couple of years in spent a year in San Diego on the Big Boat Challenge in 1988, and then made a film about that, and then helped on a documentary about the Southern Ocean Race and the 1994 Whitbread.
Right. I mean, you've covered a wide variety of documentaries, haven't you? The topics of them. You've done the Ed Hillary in India. You went to India and Antarctica with him.
Yep.
And I mean, a variety from mountains to rock stars to concert pianists. It's
yes.
been a varied career.
Yeah, well, it's been a mixture. I mean, I've concentrated on documentaries, and you know, I suppose in the last 10 years or more. But I really started off making studio programs, and you know, programs like under the aegis of the South Bank Show,
which is a highly popular BBC show, isn't it?
Yeah, Melvin Bragg.
Yeah.
I did two series for London Weekend Television, but they were studio series. One was called Playing Shakespeare, and the other called Understanding Opera. I originally started off as a studio director, and then slowly sort of moved over to documentaries, and have concentrated on documentaries during the years.
Did you prefer to do documentaries? Or was that accidental?
It was accidental, really, to start with. I, I never set out to make documentaries. I always thought my career path would kind of head down the road of drama or something like that. But you know, started making documentaries, and I was offered several. When I was in England, I was offered several chances to go into drama, doing things like Coronation Street and programs like that. But by that time, I'd sort of got fascinated with making documentaries, and the idea of being stuck in four walls week after week kind of didn't appeal. I mean, the great thing about documentaries is every documentary is a new challenge, and you get to travel and meet interesting people and shoot them.
In the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
And of course, I've just been reading your profile, and you won the winner of the UK Best Food and Drink Series in 1991 for a documentary called The Beer Hunter. Now, that must have been a fun documentary to do.
It was tremendous. It was fronted by a guy called Michael Jackson, not the Michael Jackson. But Michael was and still is, unfortunately, he died a couple of years ago. He's regarded as the world authority on beer, and as he said in the start of the program, you know, this is a difficult job, traveling around the world tasting beer, but somebody has to do it, and so I went along for the ride, and we had a great time. That was. We travelled to there were six programs. I did four of them, I think. We travelled through Holland, Czechoslovakia, Germany, and I got to know more about beer than I ever really wanted to. Being a wine drinker myself, yes.
So, with all the various documentaries you've done and the people that you've done documentaries about and worked with, what was your favourite? Have you got a favourite?
I think my sort of speciality has been profiles. You know, I like working with individuals. I tend to steer clear of issue-based documentaries. I far prefer to work with one person. The last one I made was with Ian Moon. I guess the Ed Hillary series would have been one of the best. That kind of took us round the world, up Everest, down to the South Pole. I mean, literally to the South Pole, not just to the New Zealand base.
Great.
And Ed was a great person, of course, to be with. Mm-hmm. Great company. I think that was most probably one of the best docos that I've made.
So, how far up Everest did you get?
Oh, not. We didn't get to Ting Bo Shea, the monastery, was the highest that we went. We had to fly in from Kathmandu, and Ed, at that stage, his health wasn't great. He had a bit of problems with his lungs. And so we flew into Paflu, which is about 15,000 feet, and then from there we got a helicopter and flew up to Ting Bo Shea Monastery that Ed had helped finance its reconstruction after a major fire there. But that was at an altitude that we really couldn't stay at for longer than about an hour or 2 hours. most people walk up there, and that will take, you know, about a week or more, or 2 weeks, to get that far. The next point after that is base camp. But flying in, you're really not conditioned for it, and we couldn't stay all that long. So a fair way up, but you know, nothing too strenuous.
No. Must have been special getting to the South Pole. How did you do that?
Well, we flew down to Scott Base. And spent about a week at Scott Base filming there, and then the Americans, American Coast Guard, had regular flights from McMurdo Base, which is just kind of over the hill from Scott Base, and they offered they gave us a seat on one of their Hercules, and so we flew from there down to the South Pole itself. Mm-hmm. It was quite a spectacular flight, and when we landed there, I couldn't really see anything. I didn't realize that the whole Scott Base is underground. You go down this very wide tunnel, a sort of ice tunnel, into into an area which is full of containers, shipping containers, which are all joined up together, you know, and two of them make up a canteen, and, you know, then there's working areas and sleeping areas and stuff like that. There is one prominent building on the surface. But anyway, when we got there, Ed and everybody else immediately scuttled downstairs and left myself and the cameraman up on the surface, where we were kind of doing some background filming, and we were going to then get Ed out later on to do an interview with him. And, pardon me... So we were wandering around on the surface, and we had the full sort of Arctic gear on, you know, sort of, you know, five layers of gloves and, you know, everything else. And I thought, it's a bit cold here, you know. I mean, it's, you know, why isn't anybody else out here? And anyway, went back down below to get Ed and bring him up for an interview and set that up. And I said to somebody down there, "What's the temperature up on the surface at the moment?" And he said, "Oh, it's not too bad. It's only minus 52. So,
well, yes, minus 52, yeah. we're talking to John Carlaw, and John is a noted producer, director and writer, and he's been living on the island for about 20-odd years. What brought you to Waiheke, John?
Well, I mean, I've been coming down here most probably since I was about one year old. My grandfather had three hotels, well, hotel boarding house stroke hotels, stroke sly grog shops, I think, on the island. One in Onitangi, one in the Lonely Roa, and one just down the road here where the ANZ Bank is on the corner. He had quite a large family, and they would all helped run these places. So I used to spend a lot of time down here. I can remember, the earliest I can remember is when I was with my cousin. My cousin and myself were sort of like brother and sister. We're only separated by a month or so. And we used to spend most of the time in the hotel in Oniroa. And I think at that time, as far as I can recollect, I think there was only one shop in the whole of Ernie Rowe, and that was a general store. You know, it sold everything from crayons to candles to whatever. And I can remember as a kid walking, we used to walk down to the beach, down the hill to the beach, and walking through grass that was actually higher than we were, so we couldn't actually see anything. So it was rather like a sort of African safari. That period came to an end when my grandfather died, and the hotels were sold, and then we kind of established a family home down in Pia, and then I was from then on I was mainly overseas, and when I came back, I sort of looked around, and so I had enough money to buy a property, and I sort of looked around on the West Coast, and I thought, no, I've done the West Coast thing, and then I thought, well, why not come back to Waiheke? So I finished up in Rocky Bay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great spot to finish up.
Yeah.
Now, one thing we haven't touched on with your CV is your writing side of things. Now, does that mean that you scripted all those documentaries, or did you do other sorts of writing as well?
I have done other writing, but yes, I mean, you tend to, as far as documentaries go, I mean, you tend to write as you're editing, as you're putting them together. So most of the writing would be done by me. I mean, in the case of the Ed Hillary program, I didn't do the writing on that. For instance, Tom Scott did that. But most of the other documentaries, yes, you kind of write as you go. So you're the kind of closest person to the action, so to speak, was your editing programs.
Mm. Mm. Now you did a program, but I just can't think of the name of it at the moment. That was set, I think it was in Greylin, and it was a family that went back in time. They were set.
Oh, out. That was Pioneer House.
That's right. Yes.
That's the first and only reality series that I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. Did that put you off?
And it'll be the last. No, I've got a thing. I've got a thing about reality programs now. They've just crazy, but this was one of the first ones that was made, and I mean, it did amazingly well. It went to number one on the first program and stayed there for the whole series.
It was an interesting concept, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, it was a bought-in concept, as most of New Zealand shows are. Funnily enough, the original concept for it was English and was produced by a very good friend of mine. I didn't know that at the time. But we got a note back from them after we had started making the program saying that they thought our version of the program was better than theirs, so that was that was good.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting concept. I think people living back in the previous century and not being allowed to have any mod cons and dressing in the period and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's been a bit of a challenge for them.
Yes, and you can't take a group of people and sort of dump them in the past, so to speak. And say, okay, go for it. You kind of have to script it in a way. You have to give them things to do, things to tackle, but they have to tackle them in the way that they would have done, you know, in the period that that they're living in. So that's where the interest of it comes from. I noticed this. Talking of that, I was reading somewhere, I can't remember what it was in. I don't know whether it was The Listener or something. But they do it, the English, I think the BBC are doing another series which is almost identical, except they're taking them back even further to Georgian days. So it's a kind of continuous story, this one.
Yeah, yes, it's interesting. Now, one of the documentaries you did, I think the person concerned would have been rather interesting to work with, and that was Dolly Parton.
Oh, yes, that was great fun. I can't remember when that was now, but that was it was a long time ago. But we travelled with we met up with Dolly in New York at the famous Studio 54, and then travelled with her and the band all the way from New York to Colorado, stopping off and doing a concert virtually every day or 2 days, and yes, that I think I'm one of the few people in the world who've seen Dolly Parton without a wig on. she got one of her people to come over and to where we were staying, and she had a big Winnebago there, and said she wanted to have a quick word with me about something or other. This was fairly early in the morning before we set off for our next location, and so I knocked on the door, and she opened the door, and I got quite a surprise because I didn't actually recognise her. And she said, "Oh, come on in," and there, lined up along one wall, were her 30-odd wigs, but she wasn't wearing one. And she had very short blonde hair, and we talked about the wigs, and she was saying how much she hated wearing them, but she couldn't get away from them because the public expected her to wear them, and that was her look. But to stop her from sort of melting during a performance, that's why she had such short hair herself, you know.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how far did you travel with her? Run?
Oh, well, all the way to Colorado. So that was, that's probably best part of three quarters of the way across the States.
Right.
Over a period of about 3 weeks or a month.
Right. And you've also worked with some wonderful comedians, haven't you? Billy Connolly, Peter Cook. Peter Ustinov, I think. Well, you probably wouldn't call him a comedian, but he's very funny. Hugh Laurie. And,
yes.
They talk about comedians that once they're off the stage, they're not that funny, but did you find that the case?
Yes and no. Hugh was more of an actor than a stand-up comedian, although Hugh and Stephen Fry had a double act that started when they were at university, and they continued doing that on stage, and they were very funny. That's when I first spotted them, and I needed a presenter for this program I was doing, and approached Hugh to present it, and he agreed to do that. So I could, whenever I watch him on House, it's like have flashback memories of the programs we made during that series. And one other person that worked on that series, fronted that program, also was Ben Elton. Ben was great to work with, and he was funny off sort of off air, so to speak. I remember I had a bit of a bad experience with Ben. We had an argument about something or other, and I said to Ben at that stage, I said, I just can't understand, that you're going to go any further in this business. You know, it's rather like the person who told John Lennon, that he was never going to that he would never get another job again. So I kind of said the same thing to Ben, and of course it was proved to be remarkably wrong in that in well, that statement, and had to apologise to him.
Oh, maybe maybe it sort of bucked him up. Yes, so now you're retired on the island. Are you doing any writing at all? Are you going to write your memoirs?
No, I've got no plans to do that. I'm working vaguely on it. Well, not vaguely. I've got a feature film that I'm working on. It's a treatment has been done for it. It's out in the wide world at the moment looking for some financing for producing the final script, but apart from that, no, I've not worked in television for several years now, and but that, you know, doing something like a feature, I mean, it can take years, and it's, at the moment nobody seems to have money to actually go head on with a project like this one, which is rather large and rather expensive. Yeah.
Have you done any stage production?
No. Well, when I say no, not since I was at university.
Right. So you're not so headed down that path of producing plays or
writing a play? No.
Oh, that's fair enough. Well, we hope your project comes off, John. That would be interesting.
It would be, and I mean, it's most of it can be shot in New Zealand. It's not all a New Zealand story, but most of it could be shot in New Zealand, and a lot of it could be shot around this area.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll keep fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And maybe have you back to talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Thank you, John. We've been talking to John Carlaw, a producer, director, writer of some note, who's now living on the island, has been for 20 years. So thank you, John, for coming in. We look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Great.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
And it's my pleasure to say good morning to Sarah Latouche. Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for coming in. And now, I mean, we know you from the cookery lessons you used to give, and from your column in the Gulf News, but you've now got another string to your bow, haven't you?
Yes.
You've been, for the last, was it 2 or 3 years?
I've been studying since 2007, 2008, and I graduated last year as an holistic nutritionist.
Oh, so that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's
great. And you've started a practice.
Yes, I have a practice on the island here on Waiheke. I practice out of Waiheke Osteopaths in Marco Street, and then I also have a clinic on a Thursday morning in the city.
Okay.
Street. Yeah.
So what exactly is involved in being a holistic nutritionist?
Nutritionist, yes. Well, basically, really my role is to look at people's wellness and well-being through the way they eat. And that, from the holistic point of view, that's not just what they eat, it's how they eat and what their emotions are around that. So there's kind of like, what I say is feeding body, mind and spirit, really. So I take all of those elements into account, but not always. So for some people, you know, people come to see me for a lot of different reasons, but so that's where I stand when I look at someone when they come, and I'm looking from that perspective.
Right, so there is an aspect there, perhaps psychology as well.
Yes, there's quite a bit of that, actually. Yeah. There's a lot of food. It's very interesting, but more so now in our modern society, there are a lot of issues around food other than just feeding your body to keep you going. A lot of people use food from emotional perspectives, filling a hole, filling a gap. You know, there's a broad range of why people eat, not just for nutritional purposes.
That's true. Is part of the problem the various additives that are put into food these days?
That can, yes, that can have a huge impact on a person's health, particularly where you've got young children with learning difficulties or allergies. You know, more and more on the rise, we see elements of childhood asthma, childhood eczema, ADHD, autism. All of these things can be impacted by nutrition, and often those impacts occur, can be preconception, but often while the child is in the room, in the womb. We've now discovered that heavy metals can pass through the into the placenta, into the baby, via So if mum's got lots of amalgams going on in her teeth, those heavy metal levels and residues can actually pass through to the baby.
Good gracious.
Yes, there's quite a huge impact on health in that regard.
Right.
And then you've got people who, you know, lactose intolerance is becoming more and more popular. Gluten is a very obvious one that most people are aware of, and that's partly due to the fact that the number of foods that we now eat on a daily basis has reduced considerably, plus wheat as a grain has been tampered with and modernised and hybridised, so the actual structure of the grain is quite different, and the volume, the amount of gluten contained in the grain has increased. So put all of those things together, and someone who has a slightly reactive system, is they may not have celiac disease, but they may develop an intolerance, is what we call it, to a particular, you know, substance.
So I guess we have to work around those things,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, that's right. And that's a lot of my job, is working with people so that they, you know, they may have an intolerance, or they may be lactose intolerant. So how do they get their calcium intake for the day? Very important with women, of course, and especially as women get older with osteoporosis and that kind of thing. So how do we construct, you know, a daily diet, a daily eating regime, and include things where they're going, include foods that they're going to get their daily ratio of calcium.
Yes, so that's what you work with people about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I like to think of nutrition, you know, I do work with supplements, and I do prescribe supplements for people where I think it's necessary, but I do like to think that the first port of call is being able to heal through what you eat, through the foods that you eat.
Right. Now, what would be the reason that somebody would go to you?
Well, multifaceted, actually. A very common one is that people want to work on their weight, and that's something that we can do a lot of work with. Everybody has a different metabolism, and there are different body types that metabolize foods in different ways and that have certain weaknesses. For example, some people have lung pulmonary weakness, you know, in their body structure. For some other people, it might be adrenal weakness. In my case, for example, I have, you know, my adrenals are an area, and thyroid is an area where I have to do a lot of work on myself and look after myself. So different body types have different weaknesses, if you like. Cardiovascular is another area, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so by working with a diet, you can change the foods around, or change the times of the day that they eat those foods, include an exercise program that allows them to regulate their blood sugar levels, all of those kinds of things. So weight is one reason, allergies, food intolerances, what we call gut dysbiosis, where there's some kind of upset going on with the little community of microflora. Well, it's not little, actually, it's a huge community that weighs something between 3 and 5 kilos, all those microbes in your tummy that do And they do all sorts of amazing things, like help to produce essential fatty acids. They look after something like 80% of your immune function. So that's integral to good health. And I like to talk to people about thinking about their gut like the motherboard of a computer.
So if you've a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. If the motherboard of your computer is going well, the rest of you will go well. If that's taken care of, you'll be able to get all the nutrients absorbed to do all the work that your amazing body needs to do.
Right. So do people need to be referred to you by a doctor?
No, they don't. They can be. Some of the doctors on the island have referred clients to me, and thank you very much to those who have. Mm-hmm. But you can just give me a call and excuse me, and make an appointment to come in and have a consultation.
Right. Well, I'm talking to Sarah Latouche, who is a nutritionist. She's a holistic nutritionist, and she's got a practice on the island. Her phone number is 372-2922 or mobile 027-315-1169.
1165, actually.
1165, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's
misread
okay.
That. White on green, it's not easy to read. And so Sarah's cell phone is 027-315-1165, and her email is sarah@livingnutrition.co.nz. And your practice is in a
Waiheke Osteopaths in Marco Street.
In Marco Street, yeah. Waiheke Osteopaths, yeah. Okay. And you deal with maximising energy levels, achieving your ideal weight.
That's right.
Maintaining powerful long-term changes and keeping all-round good health.
That's dead right, yeah.
That's great. And you also have a practice in Auckland.
I have a practice in High Street at House of Health. So if people can't make an appointment here, I can see them on a Thursday morning in the city.
Oh, that's great. So if they ring you on in your mobile...
Yep, we can organise one or the other.
Okay,
yep.
That's great. No, I'll give you the mobile number again because I got you confused before. 027-315-1165. And that's for Sarah Latouche, a holistic nutritionist. Thank you for coming in, Sarah.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.